You're listening to the Bible for Normal People, the only God-ordained podcast on the internet. Serious talk about the sacred book. I'm Pete Enns.
And I'm Jared Bias.
Welcome, everyone, to the podcast, the Bible for Normal People. Today, our conversation is about moving beyond or moving past patriarchy. And we're talking with Carolyn Custis James, an author as well as an adjunct professor at Biblical Theological Seminary. And we're talking quite a bit today about Genesis. We go into those narratives. We talk about feminism, patriarchy, and a lot of it is how we read our Bibles and what is Paul doing? What is Genesis doing? And how is it part of a patriarchal culture? And how is it getting us out of, or the trajectory is to resist that same culture? So we talk about patriarchy. And by that, and I'm not going to actually ruin it because Carolyn defines it for us. And so you'll just have to listen to that as we go along here. But it was a really interesting and helpful conversation, particularly because Carolyn's, her context of being in the evangelical world, just a grace and a sensitivity, and yet this non-compromising, confident posture about the work that needs to be done. One of the things that strikes me most about Carolyn and how she talks is the sensitivity around inclusion, and that we've often created these binaries or these black and white either or options. And she keeps coming back to the heart of being inclusive, this radical inclusivity of making sure that no one is left out, and roots that and grounds that in the scriptures and in the life of Jesus. And so that was a really poignant point that I think will stick with me for quite some time. So let's get into this conversation around moving past patriarchy with Carolyn Custis James.
Patriarchy creates power pyramids where somebody's at the top and there are a lot of people at the bottom. And our culture does that all over the place. What I've come to see is that patriarchy is not the message, it's the backdrop to the message.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Well, welcome, Carolyn, to the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, we want to jump right in to this conversation and give you a chance maybe to talk about your own story and how it connects to some of the things that you're interested in as it relates to the Bible and some of the things you teach and write about. So what's your story? Give us a little background and how it connects with some of the things that you do.
Well, I grew up in a pastor's home. I was raised on the Bible. I was not somebody who colored outside the lines. I, you know, was pretty much following what I was being taught and just loved all the Bible teaching that I grew up on. I think that really set me up for what I'm doing now. Real love of scripture and learning a lot from my parents on that. But in the church, the message that I got as a woman, and not just from the church, but just from the Christian community as a whole, was that I would find my true fulfillment as a woman when I became a wife and mother. And I'm really deeply aware of the fact that when we hit roadblocks, or struggles in our stories, they can be life-changing in really good ways. Not every struggle is a good thing. Some struggles are very tragic, but God works in those moments to open our eyes to things and to take us deeper. At least that's what happened for me. After college, I hit a 10-year stretch of singleness. And it was like the bottom dropped out.
So that was pretty traumatic then, based on how you were raised to think.
Right. I mean, I expected to go to college, but I also expected that, I mean, it's really like you expect some wonderful guy to show up and you're going to do his story. You don't have a story.
Hmm.
And it really felt like that for me. And what it made me start doing over time, I mean, I had a deep struggle with God and, you know, has he forgotten me? Is he, you know, because I'd see other people's stories moving forward and mine felt like it was going nowhere. And actually, it was going places. I just didn't realize how God was working in me at that time. But it made me look at different things in the Bible from a different angle. Like, you know, when you read the creation narrative and it's talked about as marriage, well, if you're not married, it's not talking to you. You're not in that discussion. And you're just a lot of things where my own struggle was a theological struggle. You know, who is God and does he care about me and where are we in all of this? But it was also a struggle about what it means to be a woman. And what happened to me over time was that I began to look at other women's stories. I was looking for answers for me, but then I started seeing how other women's stories weren't following the script, sometimes because they had a different calling, or sometimes because things fell apart in their lives. You know, women who were divorced or widowed or who couldn't have children, or were others who were single or maybe had something physically that they were struggling with. And so my questions got bigger. And I went back to the Genesis narrative to ask questions about what is God's message for his daughters. And I didn't want to leave anyone out. And the questions got bigger. You know, when 9/11 happened, I realized I wasn't asking for women in other cultures. I was just asking for women here. I mean, I think our theology tends to be very American and Western and, you know, myopic.
Mine's actually Eastern United States. That's as far as I go.
Well, I know. Well,
I have a lot of problems, though. Don't emulate me.
Yeah, well, talk to me later, Pete.
You know what you're saying, Carol. I mean, you know, one of your books is called Half the Church. Mm. And I imagine many, many people listening to this can connect immediately with what you're saying. And I have people very close to me who can connect with what you're saying. And just, you know, one thought that just jumped in my mind as you're talking about how your own struggles brought you to think differently theologically and ask different sets of questions. Mm. That is such a long and honored tradition. That's the Bible itself. Mm-hmm. You have later writers in the Old Testament engaging earlier traditions and asking a different set of questions because the circumstances demand it.
Yeah.
And as you know, from what I see, that's just what theologians do. We ask those kinds of questions in our context and ask, what is God doing here? It doesn't do us any good to talk about what God did. We need to talk about what God's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, I appreciate your work and how you, you know, you take those kinds of questions very seriously and wrestle with them in ways, again, that I think a lot of people connect with and resonate with.
Mm, thank you.
That was me saying you're doing a good job, by the way.
Yeah. Well, You know, I mean, it was a matter of desperation for me. You know, am I in this story or am I out of it? And I think a lot of the ways we talk in the church, some people are more in the story than others. And I don't think it's just women who experience that. We want meaning and purpose, and we want to contribute. And when you think your story doesn't matter, when you look at the stories in the Bible, some of the women especially, but also men, that God is making a point for us on a certain time in history, often are people who are total nobodies. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at somebody like Hagar, who was trafficked, a human, you know, who was trafficked for work, but then ultimately for sex. And, you know, she's the one who teaches us about the intimate side of God. You know, it's not some big name prophet. It's this nobody, you know, someone that they threw out when they finished using her. It just sort of changes your perspective when you start to see, no, we're all in this story and every life matters. And sometimes it's not the lives that stand out that matter so much. It's the lives we never hear about.
Well, Carolyn, where do you think, because what you're suggesting is a corrective, where do you think that problem came from to begin with? Where, you know, why do we tell this story that marginalizes everyone but a select few? Why does the church do that? I think that's a huge question. It's hard to answer, but I think it's a huge question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have a fallen value system when we look at people. One of the things that I think about with the gospel is that we domesticate it, we connect it with our culture's way of thinking. And I think that Jesus is calling us to something we haven't seen. You know, when he says, "My kingdom is not of this world," it's not a kinder, gentler way the world does things, or just sort of a modification of, you know, what you run into when you go out into the business world. It's another world. It's a different kingdom, and it means different ways of looking at other human beings and valuing them. Some of the language that gets used in the Bible, the apostle uses the language of anatomy. Well, if you stop to think of your own body, every part of it is hugely important to you. And, you know, we don't think like that in the church. We have people who are important, and we ascribe leadership to them. We don't ascribe leadership to everybody. But I think the Bible does. I think that's, if you're an image bearer, you're a leader. You have responsibility for what goes on in God's world and responsibility to act. You're not a spectator. You're an agent for the kingdom. So I think it's radical, and it's exciting to me because I think there's more to it than we understand.
So within that, Carolyn, you know, Pete asked the question about where it comes from, maybe some of the challenge or the problem and where that originates. But what's the vision you have for how can we read the Bible differently, or how can we do better as a church to have this paradigm shift where we see everyone as equally important, where we bring the margins in for give them a voice? And what do you see as effective strategies or practices for the church moving forward?
Well, it's really hard to answer that question because there's so many things that we consider to be sacred in the church that we can't talk about.
What do you mean by that? What are some of those things?
Well, I think, you know, we don't have honest conversations about patriarchy. And, I think we sort of define the boundaries of the conversation or what the rules are of the game, and it's hard to go beyond that. For example, when we talk about gender in the church, we have two camps. You know, we have the complementarians and the egalitarians, and the complementarians define leadership in terms of men are the ones that God has appointed to lead. And the egalitarians say that leadership is determined by gifting. And I've really struggled with those categories because I think at some point all of them break down, and it's really frustrating for people when I say that. I get, you know, it would be a lot easier for me if I picked a camp and just, you know, but
if you just played the game, right, Carolyn, it'd be much easier.
Well, it's, you know, because it's sort of like in politics, you know, are you a Republican or a Democrat, you know, and people want you to define yourself. And in the church, they want to know. I mean, I've had phone calls from leaders in especially one of the groups that, you know, when my first book came out, that was, why didn't you take a position on ordination? And I said, well, you know, I'm writing to a broader audience. And when anybody comes across that statement in the book, they think it's that I'm not writing for them. You know, that I'm writing about this argument. And I want my goal in my work is to not leave anyone out in what I'm saying. But you know, if you take those two positions, if you're a complementarian, you believe the man is the leader, you know, what am I supposed to do as a single? Mm-hmm. You know, am I headless or am I leaderless? What happens to the woman whose husband loses his job, you know, and she can get a good job? You know, it breaks down for some people where they can't do it. You know, a woman loses her husband, you know, he leaves her or he doesn't want to be the leader or he dies, you know, so then where is she? And, you know, if we take the egalitarian message around the world, there are places where women will get killed. Mm. They'll get killed. And I believe in equality. I believe that's just cemented into the creation narrative. But you can't always live like that. You know, there are cultures and there are families where you can't do that. Mm. And, but you can live the gospel. You can live the gospel under a burqa. You can do that. You know, and that's why I feel like we're talking about the wrong things. Instead of saying, what do we need to do to advance the kingdom of God wherever he has us? We're trying to fit into these roles that, constrain us instead of inviting us into the mission of God.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mundt reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
You've got a captive audience here. Some people might say, though, that vision comes from the Bible itself, because the Bible is fairly patriarchal.
Yes.
But I'm sensing it. Of course, I know your work well enough to know that you're willing to think differently about how to handle some of those passages, and not just handle them differently, but look at them from a different angle that's almost, I guess, required by your own context in life. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when you start reading on page one of the Bible, you know, you don't have patriarchy. What you have in those first two chapters is God creating human beings to rule creation, not to rule each other. And we are defined not by each other, but by our relationship with our Creator, because we are created to be reflections of Him, to participate in divine revelation, if you will, because we speak and act for Him. And when you have the fall is when that outward rule is turned laterally toward each other. And, if you look at the text in, you see how the elements of patriarchy are overthrown in the Bible. I think the Bible dismantles it. And I was surprised to see that, but I think, you know, when you learn more about the patriarchal world, the Bible reads differently. For example, when we lived in Oxford, I had two friends. One was from Pakistan and the other was from India. And both of these women were really smart. One of them had her PhD. And all of the North Americans over there were, you know, we loved our time there, but we looked forward to going home. And both of these women told me that they dreaded going home because their cultures were more patriarchal than we are here in the West. And they said they would come under the thumb of their mother-in-law and be treated as a child. And I wish I had thought to show them in the second chapter of Genesis, where it is talking about the implications of the creation of male and female for marriage. And it says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. That's the opposite of how patriarchy works. In patriarchy, a woman becomes the property of her husband's family. So you have an anti-patriarchal statement of the most fundamental nature in the second chapter of the Bible.
Maybe with that, can you, I just think maybe some of our listeners don't necessarily track with all of what patriarchy means. Maybe can you just define what you mean by that and where you see it in the Bible, and maybe like Genesis 2, where you see it is resisted.
All right. Patriarchy is defined as father rule. And it's a social system that has really impacted every culture in the world. And it means that sons are more important than daughters. It means that you have in when you really have patriarchy, you have polygamy, you have slavery, it's a part of it. You have primogeniture, which is a source of enormous conflict among sons. It means that the firstborn is like the crown prince of the family. And the men, the sons are the ones who inherit, but if a man has three sons, he's going to divide his estate four ways, and that firstborn son gets a double inheritance. The others get a fourth. So it's it's a system where we define ourselves in relation to one another, and men are the ones who prevail. And it starts right away. You know, that's what is described that the impact of the fall is going to do. It's going to create the rule of men over women. That's the history of the world. And, it's more intense in some other cultures, you know, where women aren't even allowed to show their faces in public. But the Bible, it comes out of a patriarchal culture. And what I've come to see is that patriarchy is not the message. It's the backdrop to the message. So the more we understand about patriarchy, the more radical and powerful the message of the Bible will appear to us. One example that I give is the story of Mary of Bethany sitting at the feet of Rabbi Jesus, which, if it's taught here in America, where women go to school, they go to university, they become professors, you know, it's really hard to get excited about that text. But if you take it to the Middle East, if you take it to Pakistan, where little girls are getting acid thrown in their faces for going to school and they're banned from their education because they want them to marry and start producing sons. If you took that story and told it to girls in those cultures, they would absolutely love Jesus and what he's doing in that story. So it's a very, you know, but if you understand how these patriarchal cultures work, then the message of the Bible becomes more potent. When women step out on the pages of Scripture, it becomes a huge deal, more important, more radical and significant than it would be in our own culture.
Mm-hmm. I mean, our culture limits our ability to understand some of those texts.
Well, we've Americanized it, and
right.
You know, we're always looking for an application instead of looking to see how God is revealing himself, or how the stories of people in the Bible show his love for them and how he empowers them to do his work in the world. It's just, you know, just, yeah.
So you talked about though that the Bible comes out of a patriarchal culture. So how do you see that, in some ways, it seems like the Bible is part and parcel of a patriarchal culture. It reflects that culture, and in some ways it resists it. So how do you kind of read the Bible in a way that you can pinpoint where does the Bible ever endorse a patriarchal culture or society, I guess, is a question I would have for you in the way you read it, or is it all resisting patriarchy in its own way?
I think there are ways in which the Bible overtly dismantles it. Like, primogeniture means the firstborn son is the most important. But you have in the book of Genesis alone, where God is choosing son number two, he chooses Jacob and not Esau, he chooses Isaac and not Ishmael, he chooses Judah, who's number four, and Joseph, who's number 11, he chooses David, who's number seven, which would just be outrageous in the patriarchal world. So, you know, you have that where, you know, it's overthrown. If you look at the story of Jesus and how he interacts with women, it's a violation of the way things typically work in patriarchy. You know, you just, and it's over and over again where he has public conversations with women, where a man comes to him because his 12-year-old daughter is dying. Who cares if a 12-year-old daughter is dying? But Jesus drops everything and runs to, turns out, bring her back to life. You know, it's, you know, these are just miracle stories to us. But if you told them in the patriarchal world, you know, like you have China where they had the one child policy and everybody wanted boys. So if they had girls, sometimes they would, now they would abort them because they can, ultrasound helps them with that. But they would kill them, you know, it would just, or just, you know, throw them out. So it's, yeah.
So you mentioned several implications where patriarchy is still overt and the Bible can speak to those contexts in Pakistan and China. What are the ways that you still see Americans engaging in patriarchy? It sounds, you know, listening to some others who talk about patriarchy and how it's still in the church and other things, like, it sounds like in some ways it's gone underground or maybe it's not as explicit or overt, but are there ways that the Bible can still speak to us in our sort of Americanized way where we're maybe not explicitly patriarchal, but do you still see some of that at play?
Yeah. I mean, I think in our culture, we still have, even though we're more egalitarian and women, you know, have enormous rights in our culture, enormous rights and protections. There's still patriarchy still at work. And, you know, it means women are still struggling in a lot of ways. It means that there's racial racism, you know, that goes on where that, you know, it's patriarchy creates power pyramids where somebody's at the top and there are a lot of people at the bottom. And our culture does that all over the place. And I think, you know, that part of the difficulties are some of the things that Paul is saying in his epistles to the church. And I love when he says that we are to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, because he doesn't tell us everything. There are a lot of things we face in life where we're figuring it out and trying to do our best, understand, you know, how does the gospel work here? And I think a lot of what he's doing is actually very radical, because in the first century culture, he's taking the gospel into that culture, and he's not being explosive about how he's doing it and just, you know, rocking the boat. He's trying to ease it in. I mean, it's a culture where it totally depend on slaves, and there were some people who were going to die as slaves, and he's instructing the church on who they are in the body of Christ. And, you know, he's instructing Christian masters, which they wouldn't all have, that they have a master too, which would radically change how you behave towards your slaves. I mean, I think it's, you know, the gospel raises questions about how we live our lives and how we interact with others. And it doesn't give us specific instructions for every little detail. We have to struggle with what it means to live the gospel in our relationships.
Yeah, the Bible doesn't just lay it out, so to speak. We have to work through it and think theologically and contextually, which is, and that context is getting bigger all the time, because it's wherever we are, it's global. We can't just stay in our village anymore. And that just, I'm just, you know, as you're talking, Carolyn, I just keep going back in my mind to how inevitable it is to have to, it's a sacred responsibility to rethink our theology because of when and where we live. You know, this might not have been an issue, maybe it should have been, but it wasn't an issue maybe 200 years ago, 300 years ago. But with the world that's gotten so small, I mean, we can't avoid these things. And what I think what's important about what you're doing, I mean, there are many things, but I think one thing is that you're working very hard to root all this, not in let's get over the Bible, but let's listen to what it's saying from an angle that doesn't privilege the male perspective. Is that, I mean, am I representing you fairly when I put it that way?
Well, I think, you know, there's things change when you bring more perspectives to the text. And, you know, you just there, I mean, some of the things that I've been publishing in my work, when I talk to some of my friends who are professors, you know, sometimes they'll say, you know, I just never thought of that. And part of that is because they're not women.
Well, right. Know? Yeah.
And there are things that they see that I don't see. You know, so when you bring both of those perspectives together, you get a richer understanding of the text. Just like if you bring somebody in the conversation who comes from a different culture, you know, there are things that they'll see that you just would not see from your Western American point of view.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 € pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
So, you know, I want to go back because something's ringing in my head about earlier when we talked, you kind of started with talking about singleness and how you can feel lost when the church maybe in some ways presents your identity almost as, or your purpose as to be a spouse, you know, to be a wife, to be a mother, these things. And in some ways, I feel like, you know, I think of biblical texts of, you know, the man's the head of the woman and these things. But coming back to the identity issue, what's a better frame of reference that we can and pastors can? And, you know, when you're teaching students or talking in churches or talking to other Christians, what's the identity question? How do we get at a different set of identity questions when we're working through this? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Because, I mean, I think that's what we're looking for. And, you know, if your demographics define who you are, you know, there are things about that you can lose. You know, you're at risk if your identity is your job, you know, or your, you know, any aspect of who you are, maybe the family you're in or your socioeconomic situation or your race, any of those things that define you, you know, can create risk for you. And so what I did was I went back to Genesis 1 and 2 because I wanted to know what the Bible said about me as a woman before the fall. And there are really big statements that God is making in the creation narrative about his sons and daughters. And, you know, it's just sort of such an abused part of scripture that we use to argue this about this and that and the other thing. And I just wanted to pay attention to those statements. And I didn't want to leave anyone out, and I didn't want to leave out any season of a person's life. So I wanted to know, what am I at birth that I'll be when I die? And the three things that I focused on this for women, but it's totally applicable to men as well. The first is that God created us to be his image bearer. Being God's image bearer comes with a mission. And that mission is first and foremost to know the God who made us, so that we can understand who we're supposed to be like. But it also means that we speak up to him, that we're responsible for what goes on in his world. And the calling is outward toward creation. You know, the be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, rule and subdue. We tend to take as physical callings, which they are, but they're also spiritual and theological callings, you know, to live fruitful lives, to explore the earth's resources, to cultivate and utilize and steward them. You know, it's a calling to all different kinds of careers and enterprises that human beings get involved in. So, you know, the image bearer identity defines us by our creator. And so it's not something anybody can take away from us. Even if you are abused and mistreated or trafficked, you know, the atrocities that happen to you are worse because they are an affront to Almighty God. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that when God creates the man, he says it's not good for the man to be alone. That's in the second chapter of Genesis. And one of my aha moments in my work was the study of the word azer, which is what God says he's going to do when he remedies the problem of the man's aloneness. I will make it's translated helper. I'll make an azer suitable for him. And the word azer was where I focused. And it's a word that's used 21 times in the Old Testament. It's usually translated helper. And it's used more times for God as the helper of his people. It's 21 of the 21 times, it's used 16 times for God, which sort of got an upgrade for the woman as a strong helper as opposed to just any old kind of helper. But when I looked up all of those 21 words in the Old Testament, they're every time it appears in a military context. You know, it's God is the shield and defense of his people. There's that kind of language in every one of the 16 verses for God. Three times it's used for nations when Israel's under attack and wants the nations to send their armies to help them defend against their opposition. And the remaining two times in Genesis, it's used for the woman. And when you look at Eden, we talk about the Garden of Eden, but Eden was a war zone. There was an enemy getting ready to attack, and there were dangerous trees in that garden, and the man is commanded to guard it. And you know, they're going to rule and subdue, which means they're going to face opposition. And I concluded from that, and there's lots of work that's been done on this and, you know, in some other research, but that the Azer is a warrior, that the man needs a strong warrior with him in the battle. It's not because there's something wrong with the man. There's nothing wrong with him. He's a masterpiece. But the battle is so fierce and the scope of the mission is so enormous that he needs strength in the battle with him. And I tell women and girls that God created them to be Azer warriors for his purpose, that they're God's image bearer, that they're Azer warriors. And the third thing is that when he created male and female to be his image bearers, he said he blessed them, and then he spreads this mission before them. And I call that the blessed alliance, that he's so over and over again in Genesis 1 and 2, that he means for his sons and daughters to join forces for his purposes, that it's an alliance, it's a kingdom strategy. And, you know, this patriarchal way of operating totally disrupts that. and women are sidelined in, you know, patriarchy and it's in its most intense forms, turns women into baby makers. They are supposed to produce sons for their husbands, and it's all through the Bible where they're in pursuit of sons. And so, you know, I think that we have a huge calling and a huge identity, and it can't be taken away from us.
Well, I think that's a great place. Unfortunately, our time is coming to an end, but really appreciate those 3 points, Carolyn, and really talking about moving past patriarchy in the biblical narrative and in our churches and how we think about identities, especially for women and those on the margin. But as we end our time here, is there a place that people can find you online or find the work that you're doing?
Or just show up at your house. What's your address?
My website, I'll give
you. Okay, we'll leave it. Okay, that's safe. You're probably
that's
wise.
That's for a second. That's for the second podcast.
Okay, my website is carolynkestisjames.com, and you can find information about me and a lot of what I've written there. And of course, you can always read my books. I've written a lot about patriarchy in Maelstrom. I think sometimes men are afraid of that book, but it's not a male bashing book. It is absolutely amazing stories about men in the Bible that we've overlooked. And I think the men that I know who have read it have been very affirmed by it. And then Half the Church is a lot of what we've been talking about here. So those 2 books at least, but there are others.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thank you again for joining us. Just a fascinating conversation, Carolyn. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. We had a great time.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us for this episode of The Bible for Normal People with Carolyn Custis James as we talked about moving past patriarchy. Again, you can find her online at carolynkustisjames.com. You can look up some of the books that she's written on Amazon, Maelstrom, How the Fall Impacts Males and God's Vision for Men, Half the Church, which is a book about God's global vision for women. And so follow along with what she's doing. We'd also just invite feedback of this podcast, of any podcast, really trying to create a conversation more widely than just the ones we have here on the podcast. You can do that at thebiblefornormalpeople.com. You can sign up for a newsletter from The Bible for Normal People that Pete writes monthly. Or you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thebibleforNormalPeople, where we have ongoing conversations through book studies, the Patreon platform, quarterly hangouts, and other conversations like our Slack group, a community of people who are connecting around the episodes and other questions they have about the Bible and faith and what does it mean to read the Bible and what is it and what do we do with it. So check us out, patreon.com/thebibleforNormalPeople and thebibleforNormalPeople.com.